we forget this is the Memorial Day weekend, and that does not just mean national barbecue time. It does not mean the official opening of some of the swimming pools. It does not mean go spend $12 at the movie theater to see, what is it, X-Men and X-Men this week or whatever's at the movie theater. It is also a time to remember all the men and women who gave the last full measure of devotion in defense of this country, beginning with Crispus Attucks in Boston at the Boston Massacre in 1770. And we're privileged today because in 1940, well, first of all, if you remember American history, African Americans have served in the army of this country going back to colonial days with Washington and them. African Americans served on our ships in the Navy. I don't know whether this is true or not, but I bet you there was a brother with John Paul Jones on that ship where he beat up the British folk on, what is it, the Bonhomme Richard or whatever. In the darkest days, so there have always been black folks in the Army and the Navy. Can't say that for the Marines. And if you'll remember your American history at Pearl Harbor, Dory Miller won a medal shooting at those Japanese planes. Got a couple of them, too. African-American. But in the darkest days of World War II in 1942, it wasn't guaranteed we was going to win this thing. And Franklin Roosevelt was looking for every able-bodied person he could, and he looked around and said, wait a minute now. There's Negroes in the Army. There's Negroes in the Navy. How come there are no Negroes in the Marine Corps? And, you know, Franklin Roosevelt was a Navy guy, so he knew what the Marines were. So he issued an order to integrate the Marine Corps. Now, the Marine Corps wasn't thrilled about that, so they didn't want the blacks to go down to Paris Island. They didn't want them to go to Camp Lejeune. They didn't want them to go to Camp Pendleton. So you know how the white folks do sometimes. They created their own camp off to the side of Camp Lejeune in North Carolina, and it was called Montford Point. And over a eight-year period from 1942 to 1949, some 19,000 African-American men went through Marine boot training at Montford Point. They broke a color barrier. The white Marines weren't thrilled. They didn't want them there, but they were there. And they served with distinction. And then in 1949, Harry Truman said, now, come on now, I ain't tired of this separate stuff. Y'all going to start serving in Marine. If there's a guy missing, then send the brother over there. But it wasn't until Korea, when the North Korean communists came across the 38th parallel, and things were desperate then. And at that point, the Marines were looking for any able-bodied rifleman, because every Marine is a rifleman. And then that's when full integration of the Marine Corps began. But it was the Montford Point Marines, the men who trained in segregation and had to endure a Marine Corps that didn't want them there. They persevered. And a couple of years ago, the Congress of the United States of America okayed, that's Speaker Boehner and Harry Reid working together, to honor the Montford Point Marines with a Congressional Gold Medal. I have two of those medals looking at me, and they're around the necks of two Montford Point Marines. I've got Corporal Robert D. Smith. He's not one of them. He's one that helps preserve the history. He's a little younger than these two other gentlemen who are, they might be 17, 18 years old. I kind of get the feeling. We have, and we're honored to have, Corporal Averett Corley and Sergeant Major Johnny C. Washington, which means he outranks Gibbs. So, if Gibbs was up in here from NCIS, Gibbs would have to salute Brother Sergeant Major Johnny C. Washington. It is an honor and privilege to have these heroes in our studio. Brothers, Marines, hoorah, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What was it like, Sergeant Major Washington and Corporal Corley, what was it like back then? First of all, how did you get involved in wanting to be a Marine? Were you drafted, or once you got the word in from the black newspapers and the black press that the Marines were accepting African Americans? Sergeant Major, what motivated you to want to be a Marine?
What motivated me to want to be a Marine? I seen a white Marine with his dress blues in, real sharp. I read a little history on them, and I decided I want to be in a fighting unit. I want to go someplace that they didn't want me to go. And I decided to become a Marine from that day on, 1945. I ended up going to Moffa Point Marines.
And Corporal Corley, what motivated you to want to be a Marine?
Well, my situation was... I was a sophomore at Addicts High School. I was in the band, and a bunch of my bandsmen wanted to go on the Avenue, and the Avenue was jumping back then. And we wanted to be able to go in these joints on the Avenue. And so we went down to the draft board and got our draft cards at the KP building in Massachusetts and Ohio. And a week later, I got a 1A draft card and tell me to report for physical. The other members of the band were my buddies, and they said they declined. They wanted to stay in school. So I dropped out of high school. I was a high school dropout. And I went through the procedure of taking a physical down to the armory, Southside Armory. And they asked me, do I want immediate induction if I pass the physical? And I passed the physical, and the man said, well, we need two Marines from Indianapolis.
So you were drafted into the Marines.
Yes.
I think a lot of people don't remember that that back in the day when we had a draft, and particularly in World War II, and you could get drafted into the Marines. I think a lot of people today think, you know, well, Marines, you just volunteered for that. But you got the long arm of the, here, come on.
Well, and you still had to go down to the federal building
and go through that. Okay, okay.
Because due to the nature of the Marine Corps.
What year was that? That you
that
joined
was in 1945.
So, and correct me if I'm wrong. You guys got in there. What was the basic training like? Because people have the perception of how difficult and how tough basic training is for any Marine. What percentage of people made it?
So it's about 85%. I'd say 85% is high.
Okay.
To make it
okay.
To boot camp.
So after you got through boot camp and you got your rifle, did you go to combat, or did they hold you? Did you, you know, did they send you overseas and you were one of the what they call service companies?
They train you at Moffa Point.
Yeah.
For 3 or 4 months. Then they set you out to draft for going overseas. A lot of the black went to ammo.
That means you had to be in charge of the bullets and the shells and stuff?
That's right.
That's dangerous. Isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah?
It's very dangerous.
Were you Europe or the Pacific?
Pacific.
Where in the Pacific?
Guam.
You were in Guam.
Right.
After Guam.
I was at Guam, and then I was in Korea, Vietnam.
What motivated you to be a career Marine? Because to be a Sergeant Major, which is the highest enlisted rank among Marines, and it is an exalted rank in the Corps, what motivated you to make the Marine Corps your career?
I once talked to Sergeant Major Huff and also Hash Mark Johnson, Sergeant Major Johnson. And I was a prisoner chaser. They had Muffle Point, and he said, young man, said, you will make a good Marine. Why don't you stick with it? Now, from that day on, I decided I would be a Marine. And Sergeant Major Johnson used to tell me, say, you's a good boy. He said, you're going to mush someone in the Marine Corps and say, you're going to be a Sergeant Major in the Marine Corps.
Oh, my goodness.
So this is what I ended up in the infantry all my time. And end up as a sergeant major. My last 3 years as Marine Corps, I was sergeant major.
Mm. Were you ever a drill sergeant?
No, I never was a drill sergeant.
That wasn't in you, huh?
That wasn't in me. I was strictly infantry all the way.
Corporal Corley, how would you know, after you did your basic training in Montford Point, where were you stationed?
I was stationed at NOB. Norfolk, Virginia, Naval Operating Base.
Right, okay.
I was guarding warehouses. And boot camp was extremely hard. And thank goodness my drill instructor was from Indianapolis. Orville Trabue, Sergeant okay. Orville Trabue, he's passed now. But he was just like a father figure to me when I got through boot camp. It was extremely hard. They expected more out of the black Marines than the average Marine because we were the first and we had to set an example. And a lot of the young boots, like you said, they didn't make it. I say on a platoon of 32, about half of them would actually make it through boot camp. It was that harsh. It was very harsh.
239-1310. 239-1310 is AFT News and Amos. You've been listening to Literally Living History, and they're just two of the thousands of African-American men that went through Montford Point from 1942 to 1949, paving the way for African-Americans to serve with distinction in our U.S. Marine Corps from that date until literally right now. All around the world, Robert Smith was a corporal in the Marines, and he's part of the Montford Point Marine organization. These are just two of the pioneers. I think the first question is, does the Marine Corps today teach all of its recruits about what these men went through and how their sacrifice, how their heroism, how they carry themselves was in the best tradition of the United States Marines?
That is true. Up until recently, when General Amos, who is the Commandant of the Marine Corps, when he got on board with the Montford Point Marines, he was able to institute all the education of their history of the Montford Point Marines into the basic knowledge of which is given at boot camp.
Right.
So now the history of the Montford Point Marines is being taught at boot camp level for all recruits coming through Montford, through the Marine Corps.
So when everybody talks about, you know, 1776 and the war and Tripoli and the War of 1812 and what was it, Belleau Wood. And all of those historic points, Montford Point is in that timeline.
It is now. It is. Due to the efforts of, again, Commandant of the Marine Corps.
And that's the one, the last Commandant before this one or a couple Commandants down?
The one now.
The one now.
General Amos is still Commandant of the Marine
Corps. See, somebody with my name. It's amazing. how important is it to understand the accomplishments, not just of the two gentlemen that are here, but all of their peers that went through that?
Due to the fact of things that they went through at the time, segregation was the law of the land. So at that time, these gentlemen had to go through astronomical feats just to be called a Marine, to earn that title, and we earned that title. Their accomplishments are still being written today because of the few that are still living, who are able to tell their stories, are able to now interject that into the Marine Corps. As I said, knowledge of what we do and what they do and what they went through at the time. They are far beyond anything I've ever done because I've been most impressed in my last 10 years with this association in meeting these gentlemen who have achieved so much after the Marine Corps. Ambassadors, doctors, educators.
Right.
We have one here, Mr. Price, who is not here, one of our original Muffet Pointers.
Mm-hmm.
He is an educator here in the city of the fine arts. He taught music to many of the IPS schools for over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I have another gentleman, Mr. Hubert L. Redden, who is also one of the original Muffet Pointers, which is part of our local chapter, who is not here.
Mm-hmm.
These gentlemen, I want to make sure that they get that information out to let them know that they are here. And they're not here in spirit, body, but they are here in our spirits.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. As you may have questions, we are with Living History. Members of the original Montfort Point Marines, the men, the brothers who helped integrate, break down the color barrier in the best military organization in the world, and that is the U.S. Marines, because if I didn't say that, these Marines would just jump all over me. They may be in their 90s, but they would know how to come across this table and take me out. 239-1310, 239-1310, that's afternoon's name. Is Sergeant Major Washington, Corporal Corley, it was in June of 2012 where you all received that gold that you're wearing around your neck. And some serious gold, too. Lord, Lord, Lord. What was that experience like, Sergeant Major?
That was the outstanding experience that I've ever had in my life. It's an honor to receive that medal I've been kept for so long. So it's coming out of Marine Corps now that awarded this award to us. And it was really something. I had a 3-star general that put the medal around my neck. Washington, D.C.
And this was in the Capitol?
The Capitol.
In the big rotunda?
Yes.
In the big room?
Yes.
Because usually when somebody puts a medal around, it's like a captain or something. It's a 3-star general.
That's right.
A 3-star Marine general.
Well.
Okay, that gets
to the general, 3 stars.
3 stars. That's high up. Because the commandant only got 4.
4, yes.
Corporal Corley, what was the experience like? You're there in the rotunda where so much history of our country has been made.
Well, I am recovering, I told you, from a stroke, and I couldn't attend, even though I was invited, the ceremony in Washington. So, consequently, the mayor of Lawrence had a ceremony for me. And the original of this medal was put on the floor of Congress by Mike Spence, who is the...
Yeah, I've heard of him. he got a little job. He got a new job now.
Yeah. The governor of Indiana.
Right.
And I was awarded this by Congressman Carson in a ceremony as we were We were honored by the city of Lawrence.
And I want the listeners to know he might have had a stroke a while back, but he is in fine spirits here sitting in my studio. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Let me go to Lewis. Hi, Lewis.
Good afternoon, Amos, and to your guest.
Yeah.
To your guest there. Happy Memorial Weekend. You know, I'm trying to do something that's kind of old-fashioned and outdated now. It's called listening. You can learn a whole lot more about listening than talking. And I hear a lot of people on the TV and the radio, especially people like Tom Brokaw, write books about the greatest generation. You know, and then I think about how it should be called the greatest generation from their perspective, or should it be the most intolerable or tolerant generation from our perspective? Because, like my father, who fought in the Philippines in World War II, he came back. And he was talked about like he was the enemy or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do they mentally deal with that when they know they still got a job to do? And then how do they feel about people tooting their own horn about the military back in those days when you was treated less than human? Because I get sick and tired of hearing about the greatest generation. Those are the same people that didn't even want me around. I was wondering how they feel.
Let me ask Corporal Corley and Sergeant Major Washington what the caller asked about is, how difficult was it to endure what you guys had to endure first in the training and then get assigned to a segregated unit back then And then if you had interaction with white Marines or other whites, they would look down on you. Or when you came back to civilian life, you had to come back to the reality of what the country was in the late 40s. How could you do that military job and still have that self-assurance and that self-restraint?
Well, at that time, being from Indiana, which wasn't all that great at the time as far as race relations, but it was better than Jacksonville, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And you had to get, it was the law of the segregation, was the law of the land down there. Mm-hmm. And you just had to get used to it. If you rebel against it, you're going to get in trouble. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to let everybody know that we had two exceptional combat units at Montford Point, 51st and 52nd Defense Battalion. And I served a year in the South Pacific myself. I was on Saipan and Guam. Mm. And there wasn't a operation in the Pacific that Black Marines were not a part of.
Mm.
They were in ammo companies or depot companies, and a lot of them saw a lot of action. In fact, the first man who was killed on Saipan was Tibbs, and he was blown away by a mortar. And so we had many casualties in the Pacific.
Is that Robert Smith, one of the stories that popular culture has not portrayed? Obviously, popular culture has now portrayed the Tuskegee Airmen. And, you know, that's air, that's glamorous. You're up in the air, you're flying around and what have you. And that's a great story. I'm not denigrating the accomplishments of our Tuskegee Airmen, but with all of the 8 million World War II movies, and particularly in the Pacific theater, other than seeing somebody represent Dory Miller on that battleship at Pearl Harbor, you never saw you never see us in that popular culture. A little bit in Korean movies, when movies on the Korean War, and obviously Vietnam's a whole different scenario. But is that something we've got to fix in popular culture? Because I think a lot of our kids will read about World War II and they'll hear about the Battle of Saipan and they'll hear about Guam, and they would never know what I just heard.
That is true. As you said, I've looked at a picture the other day. They was depicting the battles of Iwo Jima.
Mm, right.
Knowing that there were blacks in that battle, they were not pictured in this movie. I saw it on TV the other day.
Mm.
And as
because there was two movies, one from the Japanese point of view where they shooting at us, and the other one from our point of view, we shooting at them. And wasn't no brothers in there.
No. That is one of the ongoing struggles we have as African Americans, getting our history taught to our youth and to the country. I think that, as I said, these gentlemen here represent that in the highest fashion of all, because of their achievements and their things that they have gone through after the fact. Mr. Corley,
may I interject?
You most certainly can.
There was the 8th Ammo, the 36th Depot. There were 700 Marines or more that was in the invasion of Iwo Jima. And on the 25th of March, 1945, they were responsible for the island not being retaken by the Japanese. The island was secured, and most of the original combat troops were boarding ships.
Mm-hmm.
And the 8th Ammo and a engineering company were at airfield number 2.
Okay.
Airfield number 2 was where they had an ammunition depot.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened, the Japanese had come out of the cave. They had been
hiding, right.
And they came out and they slit the throat of a lot of the air men that were stationed in that area. And then if it hadn't been for one observant, 36 Depot man, he fired it at a shadow they saw, and that woke everybody up, alerted everybody up, and they repulsed those Japanese. And because there was 500, they could have retaken the island.
So we thought the Iwo Jima was secure, but the enemy was hiding, waiting. We'll wait for them to think it's secure, that we're going to come out of the caves and take care of business. And the brother was taking care of business, and he saw what was going on. Hey, boom. And then.
Right. That's exactly what happened. And he got a Bronze Star for that. So. We participate every assault on those islands in the Pacific. There was a black unit that was with that, with the invasion. Plus, nothing has been said about, I'm going to give a little credit to the Army, about the 93rd Division that was at Bougainville. And
that's in New Guinea.
Bougainville is in Micronesia.
Micronesia, okay.
And Chaplain Watkins, who the Watkins Park is named after, he was a major in the 93rd. He used to be the pastor of Bethel AME Church. And we had one of their platoons help us on Saipan from the 24th Regiment of the 25th Division, the 93rd Division Correction. Which is on Bougainville. And so blacks have participated in most of those campaigns in the Pacific, but they didn't get any credit for it.
See how much history that we that you are not learning on the History Channel, the Military History Channel. You hear it on Afternoons with Amos at 239-1310, 239-1310. Let me go to Jeff right quick. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how you doing, Amos?
I'm fine.
And first of all, it's a real honor and a privilege to talk to these gentlemen because my father was at Bougainville. He was in the United States Navy. I hope you guys don't hold that against him. But he was at Bougainville, and he was at Guam. So, and he talked about you guys and very highly. You know, Amos, and I'm glad you brought up about the whole popular culture thing. Did you know it was a unit in Europe that tried to warn the United States Army that the Germans were getting ready to regroup and advance at the Battle of the Bulge, and they say, well, they're just a bunch of black soldiers. They don't know what they're talking about. And this black unit tried to warn them that the Germans were coming back. And, you know, and that's something that a lot of people don't know, that it was a black unit that was aware that the Germans were getting ready to have a counteroffensive at the Battle of the Bulge, but they were dismissed because, you know, they were African-American.
All right, good points, my brother. Let me go to Rev right quick at 239-1310. Hi, Rev.
Yes, thank you. Are there any movies that come to mind among the guests that put black Marines, or in this case soldiers, in a bad light? I'm thinking in particular of the movie Platoon, which I thought was the case. Thank you.
That's an interesting point, Robert Smith. Platoon, you know...
That movie, Platoon. I am not good at watching these type of movies. I'm just recently coming out of my own personal shell, even be able to reflect back on my experiences in Vietnam. The movie Platoon, from what I've seen of that movie and a lot of the things I've heard about how African-Americans were druggies and all this, the outfit that I served in, which is a reconnaissance team, we did not have that situation. We did not have that problem. I saw things in Vietnam that were Army-related more. I hate to put that out there like that, but the Marines, we did not have that problem of drugs and whatnot. In a combat situation, drugs is not even entertaining. You're not entertaining that thought. You're trying to survive this. So to see, you see what they did with Platoon and how they portrayed us somewhat.
Let me go to Dietrich at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. I have to get with you some kind of way. You know, we used to be sending each other to the city because I'm hearing these African-American men in their 70s and 80s that went through all this stuff, this racism and all this. And I need to say this. I was reading somewhere in the book somewhere that it was saying something about a race war, but that's God's thing and his people. But I'm out to get with you so I can work, because I can't do this stuff by myself. And, It's you know, in the movies, they don't put stuff in the movies about black people, and these young kids don't know nothing about this, and these men is almost go to their grave, and all this stuff ain't been going on, and all these Caucasians in Indiana and anywhere else just sweeping this stuff up in the world. So hopefully God can help us so they can see the truth, or maybe it's going to be bloodshed. I don't understand why these people are so racist. And I'm a young guy, and I feed on a lot of information and see stuff that's not all right through the TV, especially on 59, the way that one guy acts towards the other African-American girl is on 59. But it's a lot of mess, and it's not cool, and I'm going to pray about it and have Lou pray about it. It's getting to the point that changes will have to come. Like Martin Luther, like Malcolm X said, it's just, the keg is coming to do what it do. So thank you for taking my call.
Let me ask Robert Smith. There's the website, MonfordPointMarines.org. What else does the Monford Point Marine Association do in terms of education? Do you, you know, can schools and churches and scout troops and Little League and what have you get a hold of you guys in the different chapters across the country, and you guys go out and tell the story?
We can. We would love to do that. It is one of our goals here locally. This is what I do most of the time doing Black History Month. Matter of fact, we did a program at the Veterans Administration building downtown, which was to educate people about the Monford Point Marines. Yes, we have a scholarship program at a national level because we have over 40 chapters throughout the United States. And we have a great scholarship program where we award over $2,500 every year to a student who is on their way to a black college. And a lot of them even going to OCS, which is a non-commissioned officers. Commissioned officers school. And with that, you know, we, like I said, we try to push the education toward our youth, especially at the local level. I love to go into schools and talk to them.
239-1310. 239-1310. Now, a couple of things before I say goodbye to these two outstanding Americans. Robert Smith, if people want to get a hold of the local chapter of Monford Point Marines, how do they get a hold of you?
My number is area code 317. The number is 319-7602. At any time, you can call me at that number, and I will answer any question. If I cannot answer it, I will find the answer for you.
And you can find out a lot about the Monford Point Marines, their history, what they're all about, Hall of Fame. They got videos and all kinds of stuff. It's MonfordPointMarines.com. I had to double-check it. Monford Point, and that's MONTFORD, PointMarines.com. They got it. Chris, they got DVDs, all kind of stuff.
This is something we wanted to present to you at the local level. This will tell you the history from other interviews done by Louis Gossett. He is a narrator on this. Gossett Jr.
The one that's coming to Expo at the luncheon.
Yes.
Why do I get the feeling there's going to be a Monford Point Marine delegation?
You may well be true.
Greeting him there. Let me go quickly to the phones. And Wandle at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey, this is Wendell.
Wendell, I'm sorry.
No problem.
Go ahead, Wendell.
I want to commend the program.
Wendell, there's a problem. I think you moved your phone around, and I can't hear what you're saying.
All right. How about now?
No. See if you can call me back right quick. At 239-1310, that'll allow Chris to answer one other question, and then allow me to first ask Sergeant Major Johnny Washington your final thoughts. It really has been an honor to have you here. I want you to know, he looks good enough to take Gibbs right now in arm wrestling. If we brought Agent Gibbs up in here right now, you could take him in arm wrestling. No joke. You look great for as young as you are. You really do. I got him speechless there.
I'm 85 years old, young. My experience in the Marine Corps has been wonderful. I went from a private to a sergeant major in the Marine Corps. All my 90% of my time has been infantry. I've been a last corporal. As a five-team leader, I've been a corporal, as a squad leader, but a sergeant is a platoon right guide, but a staff sergeant is a platoon sergeant, but a gunny sergeant is a infantry gunny, company gunny, which about 250 men is my company. Then I've been a sergeant major in the Marine Corps, first sergeant. I had a company, three or four different companies with 200 and more men. All of my time is infantry. I've been a sergeant major. Yeah. I had a regimental sergeant major. I had a battalion sergeant major. And I had a division sergeant major.
Division?
Oh,
that's a big deal. That's a big deal.
I served highly in those. There was prejudice there.
Yeah.
When I retired, there was prejudice. Some, yes. But it's something we overlooked. And I had a straight pipeline with the gentleman, Curly, who I worked for. I was senior man enlisted in there.
Oh, my goodness.
So I enjoyed it very much. And the Marine Corps did a lot for the black, but we got a long ways to go yet.
Yes, you do.
For the give the black the opportunity that it should have. I would like to see more black entered into the Marine Corps. We got Lieutenant Jones is black now in the Marine Corps, something we never heard of before.
We need a black commandant here in a minute.
We're looking for one.
Yeah.
We're hoping that we get a black commandant in the Marine Corps. But we've come a long ways from my 30 years in the Marine Corps today. It's a good deal for the young black to come in the Marine Corps. And need the discipline that we have in the Marine Corps.
And that uniform, the blue uniform, still look good.
Still looks good.
Still looks good. Right. Let me go. I think we got Wendell back at 239-1310. Hi, Wendell.
Hey, sorry for the technological problem.
That's okay.
Look, I was just calling to commend your program. I was in the Marine Corps. One of the things that the caller said, and they made reference to, are scholarships. When I went to Purview, I got a scholarship and I got a sword. And at the time, you had to pay for your sword. So the Marshall Point Marine Association awarded me the sword when I graduated. And I lived down the street from Sergeant Major Huff in Jacksonville, North Carolina. The other thing I want to mention real quick is not only did you have prejudice, I'm in the Marine Corps in 72, not only did you have prejudice on the battlefield, but off of the battlefield, had a lot of prejudice. And people like Hashmark and Sergeant Major Huff were really instrumental to me. General Peterson was one of my ROTC COs. People like that really inspired me when I was going through the Marine Corps. So I wanted to call in and just...
All right.
Mention that.
Appreciate that. Tony will be our last call with these American heroes, regardless of race, our Montford Point Marines. Hi, Tony.
Hey, how you doing? And, how you doing, gentlemen, on the panel? I'm very proud and honored just to be able to say congratulations and be strong and keep the faith. But I just have two quick questions. What do you think about the VA situation? Certain patients can't get care, and some of them have died because of the, different slowness of the care for the servicemen. And two, about the young people that's, killing, and just, do you have anything for us for the young people to stop the violence? That's all I had.
Yeah, go ahead, Robert Smith.
First of all, the VA. I have a lot of confidence in the VA. I am a two-time cancer survivor. Due to Agent Orange in Vietnam, the VA has taken very good care of me as far as my recovery. Mm-hmm. I am now into my 10th year for my cancer.
And you look great.
And I thank God every day and twice on Sunday.
Mm.
I commend the VA, rather. I feel that the problem they're having now has just become recent. And over the last 40 years that I've been affiliated with the VA, I've never had any problem with it. I'm sure at first it was a very slow process where you could spend all day sitting there waiting. But they have expedited that to a rate to where they can get them in and get them out. Now, what the problems they're having today is something that I think that the country should have already foreseen because they knew these veterans were coming home.
Right.
And it's been 10 years in a battle that they should have already been prepared for. So it is negligence at the highest level, not so much as the locals, that we should have addressed a long time ago. As far as our youth go, that is an ongoing problem that we have to start at home with. We have to teach our youth about the significance and the value of life. If they don't have that, they're going to do what they're going to continue to do what they're doing.
It is an honor. Even though Sergeant Major's here, I'm going to let Corporal Corley got the last word right quick.
Well, on the youth, as I said, I was a high school dropout of Attucks High School. And when I was discharged in 1947, I went back to high school and graduated and then used the GI Bill and graduated from Purdue and have a master's from Indiana. And thanks to the GI Bill, which was a godsend back then.
And still a godsend today. Again, it is an honor. First of all, Corporal Robert Smith, thank you for your service, not only, you know, in, with our country in Vietnam, with all that you went through, but thank you with your work with the Montford Point Marine Association. If you want to get a hold of him, and he'll come out and talk to your group and educate our young people, 319-7602, 319-7602. And Corporal Avery Corley and Sergeant Major Johnny C. Washington, thank you. And all of those that went through Montford Point with you, those that are still with us, those that didn't make it off the battlefield, those that came back home and were great productive members of this country who God has called home, and they're getting that thing. They ain't ready for you up there yet, but they're getting it prepared for you. Thank you all for your service. And it has been an honor and a privilege to share the beginning of this Memorial Day weekend. Reminding people why we're here Memorial Day and letting people know some of our history that they didn't know. Thank you for your service. Semper Fi.
Semper Fi.
Thank you.
Hurrah.